happy Friday. It feels like fantasy baseball season. The emails are flowing like wine. And, you know, the baseball is flowing like wine.
I thought you didn't drink.
I don't drink, but I've heard that expression. Wine flows, right? None of us drink.
That's right. This is the Teetotaler podcast.
Yeah, we got to bring on Heath if we want drunken full house reviews. Anyway, welcome on Friday, March 4th, not May yet. I'm Adam Azer with Al Melchior and Scott White. We're going to talk about a number of things. Late round starting pitchers that we didn't get to yesterday. A roto mock draft that we did yesterday, which was very interesting. I had one of the weirdest teams I've ever put together. Colorado raising their outfield walls. Michael Brantley update. Gerard Dyson going to start the year on the DL. Jacob DeGrom's hair is distracting everybody. Carter Capps going to see Dr. James Andrews. These things will be discussed. And Scott White, good morning.
They'll be disgusting.
Yeah.
That's where I thought you were going. I just thought I'd finish it for you.
Some of it's disgusting. Do you guys find Jacob DeGrom's hair disgusting?
I think it's cool. I probably wouldn't like it as a batter, but
I don't know.
Would you say it flows like
I
wine?
It does. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I have something exciting to announce. Jonah Carey, you baseball fans, you know Jonah Carey. And he is now part of the CBS Sports team. And he's a podcaster as well. And he's going to join our podcast. He's actually going to join us later today, but it's going to air on Monday. So we're going to ask him about some of his favorite players. And, you know, have some fun with Jonah Carey, who has done mock drafts with us. And just, he loves baseball. Should be really good to have him on. And I look forward to that. So we'll talk to him for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes or so. And we'll put it in Monday's podcast. Monday will be sort of a catch up on what happened over the weekend. Take some more emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And then on Tuesday, we'll finish our position previews with relief pitchers. Also, we have a lot of other podcasts for you to enjoy. We have the Opening Line podcast. That's a sportsline.com production that I host. If you want to make some bets on sports, go to sportsline.com first of all, but also, go to find our Opening Line podcast in iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn. And March Madness coming up, NBA playoffs coming up. We have both an Eye on College Basketball and an Eye on Basketball podcast. If you want to learn more, cbsports.com/podcast. All right, it's time for you guys to talk now. Late round starting pitchers that we did not get to after the top 60. Who are some that you really want to draft this year? Go.
How about Anthony Desclafani?
Oh, right, one of your sleepers.
Yeah, although I'm not currently looking at my rankings, so I fear that I might have some of these guys in the lower part of the top 60. But, I like him. I've talked tons about Rick Porcello. He's usually there very late. He was in our mock yesterday. I like Robbie Ross, but I've been shying on him a little bit because he's competing for the fifth spot in Arizona, and I thought he'd have a pretty good handle on that going into spring training.
What was the name again?
Robbie Ross. Left-handed guy. Used to play for the Tigers.
Yeah, no, he was fantasy relevant for a bit.
Yeah.
I think Robbie Ross is the Red Sox relief.
You're right.
Robbie Ray
is Robbie what Ray. I need to talk about. Go. That's hence the confusion. Yeah. I'm like, Scott, you know him. No, Robbie Ray. I'm sorry. Yeah, not Robbie Ross.
Are those deeper than like we didn't even talk about Joe Ross. He wasn't even in the top 60. I know you like Joe Ross better than those guys.
That's true.
Al, right?
He's in our top 60. That may be where the confusion comes in.
Yeah. He wasn't in the top 60 in ADP. He's the 72nd pitcher off the board. All right. So Al's looking at DeSclafani, Robbie Ray, maybe Rick Porcello.
And of course, Rich Hill.
And have you been drafting any of those, though, in 12-team leagues, or do you find those guys to be waiver wire?
I think I have drafted every single one of those four guys I've mentioned in some league or mock.
Okay.
So far.
All right, Scott, how about you?
Actually, Joe Ross was a good mention because if that's how late he's going, to me, he's in that same exciting sophomore class with Raisel Iglesias and Luis Severino in terms of what he does strikeout to walk ratio. And he's a ground ball pitcher to top it off. So I like that trifecta of skills and think he could be a big time contributor this year. Another one who seems high end, but actually, according to Fantasy Pros ADP, he's going 107th among starting pitchers behind Nathan Carnes. Is Matt Moore, if you can believe it, who not too long ago was According to Baseball America, he was sandwiched between Bryce Harper and Mike Trout in the prospect rankings. And that same year, MLB.com and Baseball Prospectus actually had him as the number one prospect ahead of both of those guys. So a lot of upside here. Obviously, we didn't see the full extent of it his first couple years in the big leagues and then the Tommy John surgery. But after a bumpy return initially last year, got sent to the minors, had a 16 strikeout game, came back up, 2.97 ERA over his last six starts, and obviously a lot of upside. So I don't think he deserves to be drafted too far behind that Severino, Raisel Iglesias class. I like Eduardo Rodriguez, again, for the upside, and he also had a strong finish. I've started to come around on J-Hap. I know I've been...
Wow!
I know I've been a
both
big
of
detractor,
us, by the way. Yeah.
Interesting.
Saying, whatever, small sample. I like Ray Searage and all, but back to Toronto, fly ball pitcher. He's going to get pounded again. But now it seems like we're hearing more about exactly what changed for J-Hap with the Pirates and what Searage did to help him. Seems like he made some pretty drastic changes to his delivery, specifically the release point to hide the ball better. And also changed his pitch selection, started emphasizing the harder stuff more, throwing the fastball more. Mid-90s fastball, that's nothing to sneeze at for a left-hander especially. And, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, the ERA is unsustainable, but his strikeout rate changed in such a dramatic way with those two changes that provided those changes carry over. And, you know, he doesn't get in bad habits in Toronto. I think he could be a nice find in the late rounds. I'm pretty much as excited about him as Rich Hill now. Couple other names real quickly, Jared Eichhoff, Tyler Duffy. They're kind of similar in that they had strong finishes, but they weren't really considered great prospects. But if you actually saw them pitched and saw the way their curveball just dropped, it was a pretty impressive pitch for both of them. And I think that's kind of an inefficiency in prospect evaluation these days, is pitchers without a changeup but who have a very good breaking ball. I think both of them fit that category, and I think they could end up exceeding their pedigrees as a result, and we've already seen some indication of that just in the little bit they've pitched so far.
So yeah, for Eichhoff, I'm glad you mentioned him. I took him in our NL-only draft, or mock draft, a few days ago. Last four starts, he went seven innings in all four of them. He had double-digit Ks in the last two. He struck out 33 in 28 innings and gave up just three runs against the Cubs, the Braves, the Nationals, and the Mets. Yeah, I don't know that he's going to get drafted in 12-team mixed leagues, but Jared Eichhoff certainly caught my eye. So let's wrap up this discussion, guys, and talk about... I'm just going to give you some names, and you rank them for me. None of these pitchers were in the top 60 in Fantasy Pros ADP. So let's start with these three sophomores, although maybe Nola qualifies as a rookie this year. I have no idea. Joe Ross, Aaron Nola, Eduardo Rodriguez. How do you rank those three?
Exactly that way. Ross, Nola, Rodriguez.
Yep, with a pretty decent gap between Ross and Nola.
And what about Matt Moore? How would he fit into there?
I think I'd slot him in between Ross and Nola.
Me too.
He's in what that about big Anthony DiSclafani? Where would he fit in there?
Let's see. Ross. I think between Matt Moore and Aaron Nola.
I have him, but he would be last of the group for me. It's not that I don't like him. I just like these others more. I think I have more upside.
All right, two pitchers that I wonder if you have any hope for. I don't think that you should draft them necessarily, but would you be quick to pick them up if you saw good things from Nate Eovaldi and Joe Kelly?
Kelly, really have no interest there. Eovaldi I do like a lot, but I'm a little concerned about his health, but so that has me downgrading him a bit. He's in the mix of guys I'm looking at in the later rounds.
He's got such a bad whip, so Roto owners beware. It's like 1.35 usually with Nathan Eovaldi. It's bad. All right, Matt Shoemaker might not make the Angels rotation, but at least he's had some success in the past. I don't know if anybody's still interested in him if he makes the rotation.
He pitched yesterday, didn't he?
I'm not sure.
And if he did, I don't know how he
but
did.
Everything I've read so far indicates that he is a long shot. Like, okay. He's not one of the two favorites for those final two spots, which I think are Heaney and
Hector Santiago.
Probably Santiago. Yeah. Although
Tropiano was probably in that mix, but I would think
Tropiano's in that mix. Yeah. And even Tyler Skaggs is in that mix. But yeah, I think the leading candidates right now are Santiago and Heaney.
Well, they're all.
I would have interest if Shoemaker does win the job as kind of a late round flyer type, yeah. But not right now.
Well, they're all better than Jared Weaver. That's what I wanted to say. If they do the right thing, Weaver would be a long man. And then final guy, I got to bring him up because now you don't even have to draft him. Like last year, I had to make the case for him as a top 30 pitcher or something like that. Now you don't even have to draft James Paxton. People, maybe he could be a good waiver wire pitcher for you.
Sure. I mean, the good start by Nathan Carnes is not something that he probably is welcoming, but, you know, it's only a couple of innings. It's early.
Yeah. All right. Well, just keep in mind, there are so many guys that I think when push comes to shove, like if you're in the middle rounds and you don't love the pitcher you're taking, maybe hold off. Maybe wait a couple rounds. And there's so many upside guys. Is that sort of how you feel? Like, don't reach for sort of a safer choice in the middle rounds if you can wait for a high upside guy in the late rounds?
The middle rounds used to be my favorite spot to take a starting pitcher, and now it's like my least favorite spot because I think there's such a big gap between the middle rounders and the early rounders, and there's not much of a gap between the middle rounders and the late rounders.
Cool. Well, pretty good stuff on starting pitchers, and we'll review our Roto mock draft from yesterday and see how we drafted pitchers and hitters alike. Here's our email of the day. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com is the email address. fantasybaseball@cbsi, that's the letter I, .com. This is from Brian, and he said, this may be a big question, but I'd love to know what your ideal realistic team would be coming out of the draft.
Yeah, that's a big question, and it's tough to answer because my team for Roto would look pretty different from my team for points.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked some about the scarcity of steals this year. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my ideal team would have some of those rare power speed guys. You know, a Starling Marte or, you know, even a Lorenzo Cain, who's not a proven power hitter, has just enough to make him, I think, pretty valuable. You know, certainly AJ Pollock, but you have to really spend for him. Mm-hmm. So I would certainly like to have, you know, one or two of those guys in a Roto league and have a couple of my top 20 starting pitchers. Mm-hmm. I want to have one of the top 7 first basemen. I want to have one of the top 7 outfielders. I've talked about that a few times. Mm-hmm. So those are a few elements of my ideal team, at least in Roto.
My ideal team would have a low-end second baseman, probably Joe Panik in a points league, somebody like Logan Forsythe in Roto. It would have a low-end catcher, but, you know, one who I think has upside, somebody like JT Realmuto. You know, not that I want a low-end player anywhere, but that if I'm going to be low at a position, those are the two positions I want it to be. Two aces, two of my top 20. Third starting pitcher, somebody who I think has ace upside, like Tanaka or Garrett Richards or Justin Verlander. Somebody like that. My best closer would probably be somebody like Jake McGee, who's not very high end, but I just don't care to spend on closers, especially in points where I don't think it makes that big of a difference whether, you know, if you get those extra strikeouts or not from a high end closer because they're only worth so many points. That's probably how it looks. I'd probably have somebody like Francisco Lindor as my shortstop, but if not him, Jung Ho Gong. Hopefully not anybody lower end than that.
I can't wait to talk about the closers this year because I have I feel like I have a much different take this year on closers than I usually do. I really don't like the position. I feel like in the National League especially, there are those bottom feeding teams where I don't want anything to do with their closer situations, including Jake McGee. And, you know, like the Reds and the Brewers are so uncertain right now. And there are just a lot of closers that I don't necessarily trust. Maybe I should, but I don't really trust Sean Tolleson, and I don't really trust AJ Ramos, although now that Carter Capps has a serious injury, I at least trust his job security. So I trust him more. Without Capps in the picture, it changes things. Then you've got three of the best potential closers in baseball all on one team in the Yankees, and one of them is suspended for 30 games, so that's kind of a messed up situation. I just don't really like it, so I might in roto leagues put more emphasis on it, which I did in the draft that we did yesterday. How are you guys feeling about relief pitchers?
I'm a little more optimistic than you are. I agree with almost all the particular observations, and yeah, Tolleson is somebody I wish I could trust, but the way that he wasn't used in the postseason, it really scares me away from him. I haven't drafted him, I don't think, in any league so far. But I think there's enough to go around. I'm okay with Jake McGee. I think actually he'll be fine in Colorado.
Oh, he'll be great, but I just feel the save opportunities won't be there.
Yeah, maybe not. But then the things that, you know, he has more control over, like the strikeouts and the ratios, I trust are going to be pretty good.
I'm going to cut this conversation off because we got, you know, next Tuesday, let's have a real fun, long, extended conversation about it. And in the meantime, let's go over some of the news and notes, and then the mock draft review, and then we'll finish with some emails, more emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. All right, the Rockies are raising their outfield walls significantly, about 8 feet in right-to-right center, I think, and about 6 feet down the left field line. I can get the specifics, but a pretty big increase in height in the walls. You guys seemed to downplay it a few podcasts ago, so just, you know, refresh my memory. How do you feel about this for Colorado hitters and pitchers?
I mean, it'll take away some home runs, but, and maybe somebody's done research on this and I just haven't uncovered it yet. What percentage of home runs are like these low screamers, particularly at Coors Field? I feel like the typical Coors Field home run would be something like a long routine fly ball at another park, and you know, making the fence higher isn't going to stop it from leaving. I mean, I guess it might cut some of those trajectories off at the very end, if you get what I'm saying.
I have a statistic for you from the Denver Post.
Okay, well, just to finish the point real quick.
Yeah, sure.
Even the home runs it takes away are probably going to be doubles or triples. So,
yeah, that's a good point.
I just don't see it making a big difference, like changing the actual dimensions would.
Okay, so they're estimating that the total home runs at Coors Field could fall by 5 to 6%.
Now, Al, does that sound like a significant percentage to you?
It does to me. Yeah, I mean,
Okay.
That's really just top of mind, and you know, you could look at the park factor data and see where that might drop them, but it seems like that's significant.
Do you have that article pulled up, Adam?
Yeah,
because it was about 200 home runs a year were being hit at Coors Field. Is that right? I think it mentions it somewhere in there. It has a year by year breakdown. But. Okay, so what's 5% of 200?
10.
What is it? Yeah. Right. Yeah, 10. I don't know. That doesn't sound significant to me. Maybe, I mean, 10 distributed across the two teams that are hitting home runs there, assuming I have that 200 number right. Are you seeing it in there anywhere? Can you just,
over the past three seasons, teams have hit 570 home runs at Coors Field, the most in the National League.
Okay, so a little less than 200 per year.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that much, and you're right. I mean, they're not outs. They're doubles or triples. So it's not such a bad outcome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, like I said, I think I would expect that it would drop them a little bit in the park factor rankings, but it's not going to turn it into a neutral park, I don't think.
Okay. Michael Brantley could be ahead of schedule in his recovery from shoulder surgery. He might be able to return before the estimation of late April, and Albert Pujols could be ready for opening day. As we've seen the stories come out for Brantley and Pujols, are you moving either of those guys up your draft rankings?
I have not yet. Kind of see how it progresses between now and my next update, which probably be early next week. Probably should move them up at least a little.
All right. Jerod Dyson likely going to start the season on the DL with an oblique strain. Are you guys, I know Heath likes him and it makes sense, late steals. Are you guys drafting Jerod Dyson? Does this injury change anything?
I was never as high as Heath was, but he had brought me around to the idea of him being a valuable late round pick in Roto. Not so much anymore. I was skeptical all along that the Royals were really going to go with him as their everyday right fielder, and now I think there's a good chance they found an alternative by then.
And, you know, I was looking at Paolo Orlando's stats earlier today. He didn't run for the Royals last year, and he played a good amount, but he actually in the minor leagues was a pretty good stolen base guy, not on Dyson's level, but I think Orlando now becomes relevant, at least in AL only.
I don't know. I'll just disagree a little bit here. I don't know that this injury, look, it's the first week of spring training. So he starts the season on the DL. He comes back in mid-April, maybe, if that. And right. He's still the same guy. I mean, he's not going to do anything other than steal bases, but I'm not sure that he's out of the equation now.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how the Royals respond. They could sign Austin Jackson and,
sure.
And then it's over, you know?
Yeah, then it is. Colton Wong, 5-year, $25 million extension, and he could be their leadoff hitter this year for the Cardinals. Scott, I know that you're a little worried about a platoon situation with Jed Jerko for Colton Wong. Does this contract extension, 5 years, $25.5 million, change anything for you?
It does to some degree. I mean, clearly it shows the Cardinals still have a lot of confidence in him, and I worried the Jed Jerko trade signaled that they were losing it. So I was wrong about that. I still think there's good reason to think Wong will get less than full-time at-bats this year. But I'm a little more open to the idea that he will get full-time at-bats, I guess.
Okay. So would you move him up over ahead of like, Ian Kinsler, who I know you don't love?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay. We talked about Jacob deGrom's hair. I think that was an awesome story. Cameron Maben out 4 to 6 weeks with a broken wrist. Is this significant? Cameron Maben out 4 to 6 weeks, broken wrist.
It's not huge, but he's somebody that you could look to late, mostly in deeper leagues for steals. And yeah, that dampens his value a little bit. So, you know, certainly it pushes the depth of the league that I'm looking at Maben now.
Yeah, he's now a Detroit Tigers outfielder. Now, this might be more significant. This will be more significant. The Dodgers are going to be without Brett Anderson, their starting pitcher, for 3 to 5 months after back surgery. I finally put together a healthy season last year, and now, unfortunately, in spring training, out 3 to 5 months. So, right, yeah. Who do you want to see get into the rotation for the Dodgers? Would you be interested in anyone? There's some prospects to talk about here.
Yeah, there are a couple of prospects to talk about. It sounds like Brandon Beachy and Mike Bolsinger are the leading candidates. And although Beachy's been a big name in the past, after two Tommy John surgeries, I don't have much confidence in him. But Julio Urias, who is an elite pitching prospect, maybe the most talented pitcher in the minors, could become relevant down the line. He's only 19. I think even sooner than him would be Jose De Leon, who had a breakthrough season in the minors last year, just one of the very best strikeout pitchers down there, and somebody to have on your radar now, at least in NL only. But honestly, I think even bigger than any of those names is this injury for Anderson makes it seem pretty clear to me that Alex Wood is going to be in the Dodgers rotation all season long. Obviously, he was going to start there with Hyunjin Ryu, his recovery from shoulder surgery delaying his start. But now I think there's always going to be a spot open for Wood. And if he does get bumped months from now, it'll be a situation where we would all agree, yeah, he deserved to be bumped just because he didn't pitch very well. So, you know, all that concern about Wood not getting a chance anymore is out the window for me. And I almost mentioned him when we were talking about pitchers beyond the top 60 as one I kind of like as a sleeper, because I think just the way he's been moved in and out of the rotation, he's going to be off a lot of people's radars on draft day. And although he's coming off a disappointing season, I think Wood is still young enough that it's too early to write him off, especially since he throws strikes consistently.
All right, so Alex Wood, who was a favorite coming into last season and then was a total disappointment, how would you rank him with, I know you're going to take Joe Ross over him, but what about Eduardo Rodriguez, who's lower down on the list? Would you rather have Eduardo Rodriguez or Alex Wood?
I would, I'd actually take Alex Wood at this point. I moved him up to 76th in my starting pitcher rankings, which, you know, is not really that high, but, you know, that's more just concern from the fact that he didn't perform that well last year. But I certainly don't have any concerns, as, you know, neither does Scott, about his playing time now.
I would take Rodriguez over Wood, but that's the right range, I think, to consider drafting Wood.
All right. Good stuff. Well, hey, that's good to know, because he really hadn't been on my radar, so I'm putting him there. Boop. 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 That's a radar. Okay.
That's your radar. Okay.
The bleeps, the creeps, and the sweeps. Anybody know that reference?
It's baseball.
Hey, there you go. Clayton Kershaw impressed with Yasiel Puig's effort this spring. He has trimmed down, you know, and his body type was something that really concerned people. He was a little bit too muscular, too thick, and maybe leading to some injuries. So Puig, yeah, I want Puig on my team. If I have six teams, I expect to have about six teams. I want Puig on at least two of them.
It'll be interesting to see where he goes. I imagine it'll be sort of all over the place.
Yeah, let's see. Where did he go yesterday?
Heath took him, I know.
In the sixth round, just ahead of my Freddie Freeman pick. So beginning of the sixth round. And he went ahead of Jason Hayward and Matt Kemp.
I think that's appropriate among outfielders, but I don't know. It still sounds a little early to me. Like, given the need, the shortage of first baseman, I'd rather have Freeman.
Well, that was like one of my favorite picks, actually. But Puig was certainly on my radar. I keep saying on my radar. He was in my queue. I don't have any cool noises for cues, but all right, we'll get to that draft right now. Carter Capp's going to see Dr. James Andrews, and we should know more by the end of the week. We should know more on Monday when we come back about the Marlins bullpen, because Capps and Ramos competing for the closer role, and right now, obviously, leg up to AJ Ramos. All right, this Roto Mock draft, it was so weird for me. I never draft like this, but me, Al, and Heath. Okay, so I had the 10th pick, Heath had the 11th pick, and Al had the 12th pick. So, Al, I want to know if you sort of felt the way I did. Scott, by the way, had the 6th pick, and he took Clayton Kershaw in the first round. This is 12-team rotisserie, 5 outfielder, corner infield, 5x5 categories, middle infield. You know the drill. So deep league with a lot of hitting, or deeper. Al, I felt like by the time we made our 3rd or 4th picks, right, I didn't love any of the hitters. Like, the pitchers were great. I took DeGrom, and then I took Harvey. And I never do that. Like, I would almost always take a hitter there. But some of the hitters that are off the board, you took Marte and Dozier at the end of round 3 and the beginning of round 4. Heath took Todd Frazier. And then after that, you got Lorenzo Cain and Adam Jones, who went to Scott, Matt Carpenter. And I don't know. I felt like there was a big drop-off in talent among the hitters after, let's say, J.D. Martinez, who Scott also took. Jeez, Scott, I like your team.
Thank you.
That's why I went with those two pitchers, because I felt like any of the hitters there felt sort of like a reach to me.
I totally agree with that. And it was, you know, every draft goes a little bit differently. Yeah. And I just decided to take a gamble at that point where I took Dozier and Marte, because I thought I was going to take a pitcher at that point. They were really starting to go. Being on the end, picking 12th, I thought that there was a real rest that would get back to me, and all of the top 20 or 22 could have been emptied out. But I took the risk and then was able to come back. There were very few pitchers taken, and was able to snag Keuchel and Syndergaard with back-to-back picks. So the gamble paid off, and that's just the way this draft went. That what round was that? Like fourth, you said? Fourth or fifth?
Yeah,
where all the good hitters just went,
and then
they were gone, and it made for some tough choices later on.
Well, and my take was like, you know what? I might just try to dominate pitching, because usually I worry about hitting, but pitching is half of rotisserie baseball too, so maybe I can put together the best pitching staff, because I took three of those top, you know, 22 or so pitchers. I took the two Mets guys and I took Danny Salazar. But Scott, you know, you had a mid-round pick, you know, a middle pick. You had the sixth overall pick. What was your take on the way the draft unfolded?
Well, I think that's pretty typical, for this player pool that, after three rounds, the hitters don't really feel like early round hitters anymore.
Right.
Which is part of the reason I'm on board with drafting a couple pitchers early. You know, ideally, at least, ideally not taking one until round three at the earliest. In this particular draft, I was able to put my ranking Clayton Kershaw fourth to the test finally. Although I didn't pick fourth, I picked sixth, and my fourth ranked player was still there. And so I went ahead and took him, Kershaw. And I still feel like, I like the way my team worked out overall, including the offense. Now, it's interesting because my second pick was actually D. Gordon, so I basically got no home runs with my first two picks. But then rounds 3, 4, 5, J.D. Martinez, Adam Jones, Yoenis Cespedes. So just like that, I felt like I had made up the ground at home runs. And drafting Kershaw in the first round allows you to do that, allows you to focus more on hitting in the rounds that follow, because you have such a big advantage at starting pitcher right off the bat. So I didn't stick to my plan of drafting two aces in the first five rounds. I took one in round one, and then I took another, Carlos Carrasco, in round six. Now, I do consider Carrasco part of that ace class. I know not everybody does, but I was kind of fortunate that he was still around there for my sixth round pick. I don't think that'll always be the case, but I would have been okay with that if I had only gotten the one ace, that ace being Kershaw. You know, even waiting to take Carrasco, I feel like I got a solid pitching staff. I have Michael Wacha as my third one, Garrett Richards as my fourth, Jordan Zimmermann as my fifth. So, yeah, I like the balance of the team, even investing that first pick in Kershaw.
You have an excellent outfield. I won't read your whole team. I'm sure these will be available on the website, but your outfield is Adam Jones, J.D. Martinez, Cespedes, Gerardo Parra, and Byron Buxton. So you have a very good outfield. I don't love your infield, but look, if you took a starting pitcher first, so you're not going to be great everywhere. Let's put it that way.
One recent development that we hadn't mentioned that actually came into play for me in this draft, because we've talked a lot about first base, obviously, the way it breaks down, how, you know, there are five studs, I think it is, five or six. Can't remember the exact number. Seven, maybe seven. Anyway, all the studs are gone in the first two rounds, or certainly by the first half of round three when Abreu and Chris Davis might go in a points league. And then you have that fallback class of Adrian Gonzalez, Freddie Freeman, and Eric Hosmer. I think it's time to add Albert Pujols to that list, because every indication right now is that he's going to be ready for opening day. May only be playing DH to start the season, but whatever. I mean, as long as his bat's in the lineup, he's going to be delivering for you in fantasy.
Right.
And it's probably a good time to remind everybody that last year in points leagues, he outperformed Jose Abreu, who's one of those elite first basemen we're drafting in round two or three. So to get Pujols as your starting first baseman, I think I got him in round nine in this draft. But I expect that to move up as the news becomes more encouraging, and to him to go in that round six, round seven range where Freeman and Gonzalez and Hosmer usually go.
Okay, Al, one thing I wanted to mention was late round steals. I know Heath's talked about this a lot, but they're not that hard to get. If you want to take, you know, DeLino to Shields late, or on my team, I got my steals in my middle infield. Elvis Andrews was one of my favorite picks, actually. I got him in the 18th round, 17th round. I don't love Elvis Andrews or anything, but to get a guy who can steal 25 bases and play shortstop, in the 17th round, that was really good. And I was able to wait and wait and wait. I guess I was one of the last players to take a shortstop, and then Gene Segura, my middle infielder. So I was able to get my steals there. How did you approach steals?
Yeah, pretty much the same way. I felt like I was I drafted Marte early, but I felt like I was a bit behind with steals, as it seems to happen on almost every draft for me so far, because I'm still I guess, adjusting to the scarcity. But my version of, I guess, your Segura or DeShields is I got Aaron Altherr. I don't know exactly what round, but he was the last outfielder I picked up. It was very late. And he's not quite the steals threat that either of your players is that you got late, but he has that power, speed, potential. So he could help me in multiple categories. So I certainly was mindful of it late.
Okay.
On the steel scarcity, this is just something I happened to look up yesterday. I went through year by year, looked at the steals total for all of baseball. Last year, the cumulative steals total across the sport, last year was a 42-year low for stolen bases in baseball. Goodness. 42 years ago, there were at least four fewer teams, right? So there were at least 100 fewer players contributing to the steals total. And that was as far back as I had to go to find a total less than last year. So it was that just kind of puts into perspective how scarce steals are, or at least seem coming off last year. Now, you could go case by case and probably find several players who had off years in terms of stolen bases, and that there's reason to think they'll bounce back. But just going off last year's numbers, it's looking pretty bleak.
There were a handful of players I just like to bring up here, because, you know, if you're looking for steals, I think that it's relevant. And one is AJ Pollock, who I've really been sort of, I think I've been a little bit low on him and thinking that the 39 steals last year, it was such a leap that I was suspicious of it. But I didn't realize Chip Hale, by a pretty good distance, had his team attempt more steals than any other manager had his team attempt in 2015. Mm. And you had four players on that roster, Pollock, Goldschmidt, Owings, and I'm forgetting who the fourth is. Ender and CRT is no longer with the team.
Yeah.
Who all ran much more than they had in previous seasons. So I'm going to be starting to target Pollock a little bit more. But really, I mean, the Diamondbacks as a whole, anybody who's got some speed there, I think is somebody you need to look at. Socrates Brito, who could wind up being a left fielder, also has some power speed potential. And then switching gears to third base, there's not much speed there, but one guy who at least has moderate stolen base potential is Matt Duffy. And he went, I think, in the last round in this draft. He went very late. And I thought that was strange because I have him pretty high in my rankings. In Fantasy Pros ADP, he's 13th. But I also noticed that Josh Harrison, who's much lower in my rankings and much lower in Fantasy Pros ADP, he's the same player, basically. It didn't show last year because he didn't play as much. But Harrison did go ahead of Duffy in this particular draft.
Yeah, only one round ahead. They went in the 21st and 22nd rounds of a 23-round draft. I actually wanted Harrison, and I was thinking about taking him like in round 12 or something like that. I'm glad I didn't because he went in round 21.
But well, right, because yeah, if he and Duffy are still on the board, it doesn't really matter that much which one you get.
Except you get the dual position, the multiple position eligibility, yes, with Harrison, which is really nice in this format. Which is
I'm
going to
be honest with you, and I argued against Duffy not too long ago, made a pretty strong opposition to him. But the more I look at his minor league numbers, I think he's probably even a better source of steals than Josh Harrison could be. I think there's a lot more upside for Duffy in that category. He was 12 for 12
yeah,
in stolen bases last year and was a guy who was stealing, you know, 25 bases in 100 games in the minors. So I think he could, again, with a very high success rate. So mm-hmm. I think he could, there's a lot more upside for steals with Duffy than even somebody like Harrison. I also wanted real quick make a clarification in case somebody wanted to check my work. When I say it's the lowest stolen base total in 42 years, that is in a for a season without a work stoppage, because there was three during that 42-year stretch, and I think two of them were technically lower, but you know, obviously a lot fewer games.
So will we have a work stoppage this year? Do you see that happening?
I don't think that's likely, no.
All right, let's read some emails. Here we go. And I just want to say that mock draft was one of the worst teams I've ever drafted, and I hope I don't get a late pick. I would like a top Well, I'd like a top three pick, but at worst, the top six or seven pick would be much, much better, because, boy, did I hate that team.
It started so well. You got Machado in the second round.
I know. McCutchen, Machado, that was great. I made some really stupid picks, and my outfield was just awful. Like I was doing backflips when I got Hanley Ramirez as my third outfielder. I was so excited because I was going to be so bad at the position, and that's never a good thing. Anyway, fantasy baseball at CBSI.com. This is from Martin. And Martin says, your analysis for Kyle Schwarber is okay. The strikeouts, he can't hit lefties, yada, yada, yada. But what you fail to account for is Schwarber's charisma. He's clearly the second coming of Babe Ruth. Cubs fans know this. Sometimes you got to let go of the stats when you see greatness. And why didn't you guys factor in Kyle Schwarber's charisma?
Clearly I've got a flawed projection system.
But
yeah,
I'm
not running for office, so.
I do want to just say, you know, because it's not that you guys are low on him. You have him as your number two catcher, but we brought up the possibility in our catcher's preview about him being a bust because of the strikeouts, because of platooning. I don't know. Were we too hard on him? He is an elite prospect, right? He's not exactly Evan Gattis, who I know you made the comparison, Scott. You project his numbers out with full-time at-bats, and Gattis would have been great, and then he wasn't. But Schwarber is a much higher-end prospect than Gattis, obviously.
Yeah, he is. But I don't think it's unreasonable to think he might go the way of Evan Gattis. I mean, Gattis was kind of an oddball prospect because his backstory was so complicated.
Yeah.
And he put up some monster numbers in the minor leagues, just like Schwarber did. So, you know, whatever. It's a tough comparison to make. Were we too hard on Schwarber? I think any time we go negative on a good player, you know, we're trying to combat the very favorable impression of him, and it can end up sounding much more negative than we really are on that player. So I guess there's a chance it could be perceived as too negative, but I don't think we said anything we didn't believe.
Right.
Just we may have left out the fact that, yeah, if he's there in round five and I need home runs in a two catcher league, I'll be glad to take it.
Yeah, Scott, you have him ranked second to catcher. I've got him ranked second to catcher. Heath has him ranked second to catcher. So it's all relative. And we think we were just reacting against him going in like the second or third round in some drafts.
Right.
And which I will still stand by is too early.
Okay. Next email is from Tim. Okay. Tim is taking us on a little journey here. So just close your eyes. You at home, close your eyes unless you're driving or on the treadmill. That could be bad. Or running. Yeah. Don't close your eyes unless you can. But here we go.
Laying in bed.
Yeah, there you go. You're sitting there with the fourth overall pick. The usual suspects are gone. You're a bit surprised that Goldschmidt went number two before Harper, but it's hard to go wrong either way, especially in a redraft league. A fantasy player rankings page is up on another Firefox tab, left of the tab with Troy O'Leary's baseball reference page. He popped into your mind somehow. Then you had to check out his OPS.
Troy O'Leary, wow.
Clayton Kershaw sits at number four on your rankings page with Josh Donaldson behind him. The modern-day Sandy Koufax, still only 27 years old, followed by last year's AL MVP, who hits in a loaded lineup, plays in a hitter's ballpark, and last season jacked 41 home runs and led the league in runs and RBI, which are golden in fantasy. Kershaw's a smart pick. It's the safe pick. It's who Spock would pick. You anchor your staff with the best pitcher in baseball, and now you can comfortably wait another 4 to 6 rounds before you draft another pitcher. But as you funnel yet another scoop of Noosa yogurt into your mouth, I don't know what that is.
I don't know why I had that reaction. Keep going.
Another name catches your eye. Carlos Correa. What a name.
Man.
What a player. A deep instinctive lunging pulls your mouse toward Correa. But your public school trained logic overrides. I can't pick him here. It's a reach. Another win for the fascists. You slide the mouse back over Kershaw. Safe, dominant, young. But, adrenaline surges through you like whitewater rushing through a raging rapid. Your heart rate spikes, and it's not just from that second cup of coffee. You should probably cut back a bit, by the way, for sleep and anxiety. The clock is winding down. Beep, 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 click. Your pick is made. The turd burger with the fifth pick feels a sickness wash over him. Kershaw's still on the board. He should be grateful. But a deep, instinctive longing bubbles to the surface, if only for a brief moment. Damn, I wanted Correa. Says the guy with the fifth pick. How cool was that?
That was very cool.
That was very cool.
He know about my Troy O'Leary page on the browser? That's a little freaky.
Did I pronounce longing right? No, it's longing. It's got to be longing.
Longing, yes.
Yeah, that was a weird... I've never... A deep instinctive longing. Oh, yeah, boy.
I thought you were lounging.
No, I think I just read it wrong.
You instinctively lounged.
I should have read that one before I...
Tim is so mad right now.
Who is?
Tim.
Oh, yeah, I know.
The guy who wrote this?
No, Tim took Correa. The guy behind him is... Oh, he's mad that I screwed up longing?
Yeah.
What do you think, Carlos Correa fourth?
I think this captures the feeling a lot of people are going to have about Correa and about Kershaw, frankly. But I'm with Spock on this one.
And I say that if he does what he did last year again this year, AJ Pollock is going to be the fourth pick next year, or at least he would have warranted the fourth pick this year.
There's a case that could be made there, sure.
I know it's not going to happen, but I would take Donaldson over Correa. Would you guys?
Yeah, easily. I mean, Correa's amazing. He's got a huge gap at his position, but Donaldson is proven, and I think the park factor thing really was legitimate for him playing in Toronto and in the AL East.
Scott from Naperville says, "Dear Billy, Kerry, and Chris."
Well, you know, Naperville is in Chicagoland.
Yeah.
So
sound like Cubs rookies who won Rookie of the Year, right?
Billy Williams, Kerry Wood, yep.
Chris Bryant.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. There we go. I feel as though Addison Russell is in for a huge year. While he does hit at the bottom of the lineup, I see him almost as a leadoff 2.0 for a fantastic Cubs lineup. Do you see him taking a big step up this year? I would love to wait and draft Russell or someone like him late in a head-to-head draft. When might be a good time to pick Addison Russell up? P.S. Sign me up for the podcast league. I'm getting married in April. This would be a huge wedding present.
No pressure.
Not for your wife.
Yeah, I know, right? That's terrible for your wife. Podcast league, since people have been asking, expect an announcement maybe in the next week or so. But, you know, we'll probably do it at random. Or we did a haiku contest for the Fantasy Football League, so maybe we can think of something for fantasy baseball. Anyway, when would you guys take Addison Russell?
I think we're talking early mid-teens. He's not gone late in a lot of our drafts, so I think he'd be lucky to get him there. But, yeah, I'm probably targeting him. I'm going to say 12th round, 11th or 12th maybe.
I'd like him a lot more late because it's just blind faith to me, and I'm willing to do that to an extent, but I think where he's going, there's still too many proven valuable players.
The bats are really, the fact that he is batting at ninth is a big deal to me. It might not be to most people, but it's just going to mean one less at bat per game, which is pretty significant to me. And I don't think this is like an Odor situation where if he started the year batting low in the order, he's going to move up, because who is Russell going to replace? Like, they're so stacked. It would take an injury. I think he's more likely to stay ninth. Okay, Isaac from Irvine. Hey, Danny, Jesse, and Joey. Who are some good setup relievers to either keep an eye on or target in the later rounds of a deeper league? Guys who played the Wade Davis and Dave Robertson eighth inning, high K inning role in the past.
First name that comes to mind is a name that is now slipping my mind, because that's just what my mind does sometimes. But the guy who's setting up for Papelbon, the former Yankee, Adam, you can help me out, Sean Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry that took so long.
Yeah, he strikes out a ton of guys.
He does. Yeah, and I like Sean Kelly a lot. I'm sure there are many others we can come up with soon, but that's the first one that comes to mind.
Who played high kick? Well,
obviously.
My mind just keeps going to guys I like as sleeper closers. And, you know, Hunter Strickland's the one who comes to mind for me, but I don't think he has quite the high end strikeout rate. Carson Smith certainly does, although he's already a name from his closing time last year.
And the thing is, like, I don't see Kimbrel. I mean, yeah, I guess if Kimbrel goes down, but then there's still Uehara there. And the Texas situation is frustrating because, like I said, I don't trust Tolleson to be stable in that role. But they've got, what, four or five guys who could step up. Kayla, they've got Tom Wilhelmson.
I don't
Sam
know that
Eisen.
He's looking. I don't know that he's looking for a potential closer. I mean, that'd be nice.
Okay,
but just an elite middle reliever. I mean, like Andrew Miller is obviously the first guy, but he's, you know, he's obvious.
Okay. Yeah. I guess we're going along those lines. And Darren O'Day.
Tony Sipp is really good. He's
And Carson Smith would be great. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Jumbo Diaz gets a lot of strikeouts and is actually a sleeper for saves, but not a great whip.
I'm sorry to cut you
off. He's for the Reds.
Tony Sipp, not a huge strikeout guy, but two straight years with 63, 62 strikeouts. Last year, Sipp had a 199 ERA. Very good reliever for the Astros.
Well, and if we're talking about Tony's, he's not even necessarily a lock to make the Mariners rotation, but Tony Zitch looked good late last season, good minor league numbers. I think even some saves potential because I don't trust Steve Cishek at all. So that's a name to keep in mind. Tony Zitch, Z-Y-C-H.
Josh Fields for the Astros. Was Will Harris for the Astros? Was his strikeout rate that high?
I think it was good last year, yeah.
Boy, they have a good bullpen,
and Tony Sipp for the Astros. All of high K-rate.
Okay, so Brandon Nelson in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Fatso, Stinky, and Stretch. Is that a thing?
Those are the ghost uncles from Casper. At least the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Were they like in the comic too? Is Casper a comic? I don't know.
Oh, it was.
That movie, by the way, I saw it recently. Oh my gosh. That movie is sick.
What,
like, it takes death so lightly. I can't believe I was allowed to watch it as a kid.
Well, I'll tell you what I saw yesterday. I saw the trailer for the new Ghostbusters. Oh boy. Looks terrible.
Oh yeah.
Looks
terrible. I'd been reserving judgment, but that trailer was
really terrible.
You know what? I don't even, it's just the typical, what's the director's name? Paul Feig, right?
I have no idea.
But it just seems like a typical him and Melissa McCarthy movie. Not that there's anything wrong with those movies, but why are you turning Ghostbusters into that movie? That's what I don't like.
I was optimistic because I really like Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig. And I like the other two girls from SNL. I think they're both from SNL, right? I know one is. But regardless, I like them. But boy, it was really, yeah. Okay, here's the question. On your last podcast, you were all talking about Steven Strasburg's last five starts being so great. I brought up the stats. I don't know if you guys were talking about. I don't want to blame you guys for what I did. The following is why I think you have to be cautious when drafting based off his last five starts and why he's overrated. Four of the five games were against the Phillies and the Marlins. You know, so anyway, Brandon goes into this whole thing about it, and I get that, but I really don't think we're drafting based on the last five starts. I was just kind of throwing that in there as a, hey, look how awesome he was. But you guys are drafting Strasburg on much more than what he did over his last five starts.
Right, and I'm going to go take a look now at the previous five starts, which granted weren't quite as dominant, but 13% whiff rate, 35 Ks in 30 innings, only three walks. So, yeah, he was pretty great even before that.
And better competition. I know there was two starts against Colorado. One was at Colorado. So it's not just those five starts. Email from Thomas. Dear, first half, second half, since X date and maybe versus Y team. if Al is the champion of the deep leagues, Adam should be nicknamed Pass, Prince of Arbitrary Sample Sizes. Ooh, I don't like that nickname. I don't like it at all. But on a serious note, do you have any tips for a guy that doesn't have any keepers in a keeper league to go against people who do have keepers? Obviously, they have the advantage. Any tips would be greatly appreciated.
Well, if it's a league where you get the extra spots to draft in, which most leagues operate that way. I mean, I think it's still an advantage for the players who have keepers, but you could take advantage of those picks. But I guess you just go, since it is a keeper league, emphasize young upside a little bit, because otherwise you're going to be caught in an endless loop of being behind the guys who have the best keepers.
Well, we got to bounce. We got Jonah Carey later today. That'll air on Monday. I had fun. Guys, thank you, and have yourselves terrific weekends.
Same to you, Adam.
Yes, sir.
That's Al Melchior and Scott White. You'll hear from Heath Cummings next week. I'm Adam Azer. All of you have a great weekend, and we will be back on Monday.